This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to episode number 7 of Wrestling Warzone, a Monday Night Wars retrospective podcast. I am JT, back in the saddle here. I've missed it. Chad Campbell, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing good. A little subdued as I'm still recovering from a post-vacation sickness, but excited to dive back into 1995 Wrestling World Warzone. We had our own little war zone a minute ago as I was frantically searching for my earbuds.
I was worried that the show was cursed because we've tried to. You were on your vacation, so we missed the week we had planned to miss. And then we were all set to record last week, and on like two different days, both days you were ill and you couldn't talk. So, and then tonight I'm like, oh, here we go. We're going to have to skip because you can't find the earbuds. So I thought we were battling a curse, but I think we fought through it and we're ready to rock. First of all, though, how was your vacation?
It was good. I can give a quick Voices of Wrestling After Dark story about the earbuds if you'd like to hear it.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. So I had my whole setup, laptop, work laptop, and my phone, my adapter, charger, earbuds, everything, put it in the bed. Well, our oldest son, and he's been doing this thing. He's three, almost 4 years old. He's been doing this thing lately where randomly he'll just show up in mine and Jennifer's bed in the middle of the night, okay. Kind of like a leprechaun.
Creepy.
Yeah, it's really creepy. Another side story. One day I actually had to wake up and went and peed, and he was just randomly sitting in the couch, and that really freaked me out.
Yeah, that's weird.
It was really weird. So we talked about that, but now he gets in the bed because he knows he's not supposed to. So that he was sitting in the couch. He has a bad dream and wakes up. But anyway, so he's gone tonight. So, you know, me and my wife took advantage of a quiet night around the house. And in the process of that adventure, the earbuds ended up getting thrown into a pillowcase. Kind of rolled up in there. So as I was dismantling the bed and the surrounding area looking for them, I did not see them, and then put my hand in the pillowcase and located them. So we were good to go. But yeah, almost a near miss, so to speak.
It's intense. I thought we were gonna talk about your Disney trip, but no, we went dark. We went dark fast.
Sounds like some talking pop material.
That's true. Yeah, you fit right in. Yeah. So all right, well, I'm glad your night. Hopefully, your night continues. So we can finish things off on a positive note for you. Maybe this will last a little bit longer. I'm sure.
Yeah, my grand finale is talking about the fraud.
Yeah, you get to see Bobby Heenan squeezed into a Chicago Bears shirt. So what's better than that?
Right. But no, the trip was awesome. Yeah. We were down there for 9 days, and
It felt like forever.
It was really fun.
Jesus. Yeah,
that was our first family trip to Disney. I hadn't been in a while, actually. I think it'd been 6-7 years for me. It'd been a long time. And we made the most of it. I'd say the kids' performance overall was pretty good. So I was happy with that. And it was really exciting. I felt like kind of the type of trip we'd like to take you know, yearly probably is what I think we're shooting for from this point forward. We're going back there in December for four nights. But after that, maybe hopefully once a year till they're, you know, too old to think Disney's cool anymore, we'll probably be heading down there. It was only a 7-hour drive. Wasn't that bad. So
yeah, if you can eliminate the flights and all that, I mean, that's a big part of the cost. So it makes it a cost effective trip for you.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, is it expensive? Of course, but I mean, it's expensive to go to the beach. We're going to the beach. We're going to Panama City, staying near Club La Vila at the end of July.
We better get hustling on this show then, because I want to time the spring break nitro with.
Right. Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah, I guess. But I mean, a condo there for the beaches, I mean, it's outrageous too. I mean, for a 2-bedroom condo, we're going with my parents, and I mean, you're talking about $500-$600 a night. So when you divide that times a week, mm-hmm. I mean, you're looking at about.
You mean
what
multiply,
our,
right? Aren't you an accountant?
Yeah, not divide it. Multiply it. Yeah, I mean, you're looking about the same cost-wise as what our Disney trip was. I mean, now we stayed at a budget hotel for Disney. I mean, it was still like $175 a night. But all in all, that's not that bad for the room we had and the transportation and everything else, I didn't think.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you had a great time. We're heading down next November, so we'll be talking about that at some point.
2019 packages went on sale today.
Did they? Okay.
Yes, they did. So there you go. All y'all right. Can walk in.
I have to start looking at that then. I got so much shit going on. It's like on my list of things to do, and it just gets pushed back.
I would actually, you probably want to start looking at it pretty close, though, just because you are looking at Thanksgiving weekend and with right. Star Wars. So, yeah,
okay.
That'd be, I'd maybe bump that up the priority list.
All right, well, I'll get on that.
Instead of grilling and posting to Facebook every night, you can do that.
That was part of my contractual agreement with Nick Duke when I purchased that grill.
God.
I had to give all the updates.
Just reaching Jason Greenhouse at the gym levels of self-absorbance on Facebook.
Hey, now. anyway, so... After dark,
you're grilling. Ben Morris is showing his nipple. I don't know
yeah, what the fuck?
On.
Topless Ben is all over fucking Facebook. Aaron George had things to say about that in the last final edition that made the cut. So
it was shocking.
PTBN has gone risque.
I've seen like beheading videos show up on my Facebook feed, and those did not shock me more than a nipple Ben Morris.
Oh, God. Fucking Ben, man. I'm telling you, he went to the West Coast and he just...
What happened?
Went to Dark Ben out of nowhere. Creepy. So I was part of a yard sale while you were gone. We've talked about yard sales in the past. That was interesting. I feel like every yard sale definitely requires like a van with 7 people. I think we talked about that and we had one for mine, but this was like a church bus, but like was like a family driving it though. It was odd. I'm wondering if they bought that at a yard sale. That's my guess, my hypothesis. But I got to hang the signs, and then I just took my son to the gym, and that was my that I came at the end and helped them move because it started to rain a bit. So I got to avoid
that bad.
The majority of the yard sailing, but I did have to load up the car and all that horse shit the night before.
my grandparents, this was Sunday, so I was still feeling real bad, and my grandparents are becoming hoarders later in life. I don't know why that happened, but it's happened. My grandfather has about like 40, legitimately, he has about 40 VCR tape recorders and all that. So if you ever need a VCR.
I may. I think I'm down to like 2 working ones at this point.
All right. Well, I got your hookup.
Yeah.
So anyway, Sunday or Saturday at an estate sale, my grandmother bought another dining room set. Now, she's confined to a wheelchair. This is about her 4th dining room set. She
Where are they?
She
all?
Fully admitted she bought this just to flip it. So it went straight into their garage for her to sell it later.
This is unbelievable.
Which made no sense. I mean, it was ridiculous. But my brother got recruited to move that. And my mom was like, well, you know, we were going to ask Chad, but he's feeling under the weather. So that was like the one time where being sick was to my advantage.
That's good. And you don't have to worry about that. 15th. Our neighbors are hoarders. May I say this for a future episode because it's a whole story. But, you know, you've seen my neighborhood. It's, you know, it's a pretty well-kept, nice neighborhood. But my neighbors have progressively gotten worse since we moved in. They have two cars in their driveway with the tires are flat that are like basically unusable, and they just park in the street all the time. And they actually get pissy if like someone is in their spot in front of their house. Not pissy, but they'll come and ask. Like I've had people over before, and they've actually come over and asked if they could move so they could park. And I'm like, just park in your fucking driveway. And they literally just like they never put their trash out, and the backyard is just like it's you can't see it as well from the front yard because they have like bushes and stuff, but in the back. If I like look over my fence, it's just like trash and garbage everywhere, and like nobody ever goes in the house. Like, and when they open and close the door, they like barely open it and like kind of shimmy out. And it's her. I don't think it's the husband. I think it's the wife that has the problem. And the problem is they're super nice. So like I think everyone's kind of afraid to say anything because they don't want to cause problems and like be assholes because they're really nice people. But there's a clear problem going on. I've had more than one person ask me like, "Did someone slash your neighbor's tires?" Like, the
fucking... Yeah, I mean,
it's a real sickness though. It's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's somebody that has still my old VHS tapes at my parents' house and way too many wrestling DVDs still and a lot of board games I can relate, but.
Yeah, but that's a difference. They're not piled up in your living room and you don't have trash everywhere. I mean, it's one thing to keep your collection. I mean, I have all my tapes. I have all my wrestling figures and my magazines. Like, I mean, those are collector stuff, the nostalgia there. I mean, to have, like, fucking empty milk cartons laying around because you can't part with them because you think, you know, that's like a real illness. And I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that place.
But. I mean, my grandparents own a mobile home, which is like, it's actually where I was born in. I was born to a mobile home and lived there for 2 years. But now that mobile home is just like full of mattresses and all sorts of crap they buy or get at the dump. So it's out of control. Like when they pass away, it's going to be awful.
Right. Just burn it. So,
yeah. We might. Because, it is on like a few acre plot. And it probably would be better just to either like roll off the mobile home, like if we could tow the mobile home,
right?
Or just
burn it down.
It's gonna look like a Bray Wyatt vignette when we're done with that thing.
So how's your obviously did your diet take a hit over the trip?
Not too bad.
You're doing okay?
I mean, it was hot down there, so only gained a pound and a half when
all right,
I
that's good
back. And then the sickness right after that has got to where I'm actually down now to when I started. Tonight was the first night I actually felt good to eat in the last 3 or 4 days. So I did have hot wings tonight. So that was, it's been a good night all around.
I'm going to finish strong. When I started doing like the calorie tracking to the fasting, I had lost 2 pounds, and that was like 2 weeks, and then in the 5 weeks since I started the fasting, and I've been diligent every day, I'm down another 11.
Oh my god!
And that's in 5 weeks of sticking to it. And I've been 16 minimum, and you know sometimes a little bit more even, given on the day. I've had a rough. I had two weddings last week. One I worked, one I attended. Over the weekend, I definitely kind of let loose a little bit as far as like eating and drinking. So I'm afraid the ramifications of that, but overall, I'm still doing the fasting and stuff. So and cardio, so it's going well. I'm feeling good. I was excited to give the update tonight. So
yeah, that's good. Now, what did you work at a wedding?
I did the video. It was the first wedding I videoed in 15 years. I was requested because I had mentioned offhand that I'd done one before, and then I got asked, and I was a little nervous. I actually refused payment until I saw the footage, and it came out really good. I haven't edited yet, but it looks good, so I'm excited. I had my assistant, the cowboy, was with me doing his first.
I did catch a snapshot of that.
So he was all excited because he did a pretty good job. He ran the second camera. I was kind of my battery bitch.
Oh my god!
So that was last Sunday, and then on Thursday I had a wedding, a Thursday night wedding. The same week, it was my cousin. and there's this whole stuff going on. He's in his like 50s, and he lives in Florida with his now wife and my aunt. And you know, she was like so excited that he's getting married finally and all this stuff. And she, over the last month, has just been really sick, and they don't know what's going on. She's had like abdominal issues and pain in and out of the hospital, and she ended up not being able to come to the wedding. So the night before the rehearsal dinner, my dad asked me, he's like, can you video? You know, he butters me up. Oh, how did it go on Sunday and do a good job? And then he's like, yeah, can you video tomorrow night? So Auntie Anne can see it. So I'm like, oh, all right. But, you know, it was my 10-year anniversary that night at the wedding.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, I'm like, my wife's going to kill me if I'm, like, videoing this whole wedding and we're not dancing or hanging out. You know, it's just not going to be good. Like, I'm banking on this kind of being a night out and earning some points. So I called up the old cowboy. I was like, can you come down and do this wedding for me? I'll buy you boneheads. So he had never done anything video related before, but he recorded two weddings in 1 week for me and did a fine job. So, but it was cheap because we didn't make a ton on the first one. You know, we did okay, but, and then this one was free. So I said, that's it. Our price is going up. No more giveaways if we're going to keep doing these.
Oh man, why does it feel like sometimes the older we get, the more we regress to like, I mean, that sounds like a college.
There's money in that though.
Yeah, oh yeah, there is, but it's like you get got the kid to film the wedding for food. I mean, it's like, we'll give you a pizza if you move.
Well, I'm like, I felt bad asking for money, and I'm like, I'm not gonna fucking pay Roger. So I was just like, so I bought his boneheads for the pay-per-view the other night and watched Money in the Bank.
What a guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's. I'm sorry, I'm helping him move in 2 weeks, so it'll leave.
Oh yeah, that's right. I did see a new house for the cowboy. New ranch for the cowboy.
Definitely the new ranch. So what was I gonna say about that? Yeah. So anyway, I feel like there's a gap in the in between level. Like for what we charge for this other one, I'd go a little bit higher, but I think I could still come in under, like professional level, and do like an 85% replica of a pro video. So I'll see how the editing goes and how the final product comes out and how happy they are. I'm kind of thinking maybe like even if it's like two a summer or something, you know, two or three a summer. I don't want to eat up all my weekends, but if I can get kind of word of mouth and do a couple, I think I'm down for that.
Oh my God, bar mitzvahs, weddings.
Yeah, why not?
One stop shop.
Yeah, why not? You know, you always use the extra cash.
I think Alex is probably going to be holding a video camera in like 2 years, following you around.
Filming some backyard wrestling.
Yeah, replace Cowboy with him. All right, so we've kind of skirted around. I mean, the shows we're doing tonight, especially on Raw, there wasn't a whole lot of substance. So.
Yeah, both shows are... Well, I guess we'll just get to it finally, and we'll see. So last week we started with Nitro, so why don't we start with Raw this week? And fire things up. So this is the 10/9/95 edition. We're now what? 2 weeks removed from In Your House 3, right?
2 weeks removed from there. 13 days until In Your House 4. So tight smack dab in the middle.
Tight turnaround, indeed. We are taped still from Grand Rapids. It was taped the week before. So, and it's an interesting episode, as we'll see, Chad, because they kind of reuse, I guess we'll just talk about it. So why don't you start us off?
So we start with clips from a Survivor Series press conference that they had. HBK here, he gives some thoughts, and he looked pretty rough. I thought the Marines had already kicked his ass by the way he was looking here. He did not look good at all, but he basically just gives us some like humanitarian speech stuff, like, oh, it's great to be blah blah blah. And then that leads right into our marquee matchup, kind of Saturday night's main event style here for this Raw, where we get the big six man, which is Diesel, Shawn, and The Undertaker, which is an interesting trio.
Yeah.
Versus Owen Hart, Davey Boy Smith, and Yokozuna.
I think this is the biggest star power match of 95, honestly, when you look at it.
Brett and Razor, these are probably six of the eight biggest names in the company, right? I mean, maybe if you want to throw Sid in.
Yeah, no, I'd say these six, with the way they're positioned right now, are the top, like you said, outside of Brett and Razor. But outside of maybe like LT Bigelow, like this might be the biggest match. I guess we'll see come Survivor Series, but I think this might be like the most loaded match they've put together as far as talent all in the ring. I think the Rumble didn't even have these many big guys in it at once this year.
Right.
So I think in 1995, this may be one of the biggest matches they put together.
Interesting. My thoughts on that, because this was probably about a 12-minute match. It took up about the first half of the episode, everything involved here. So just my thoughts on the match. Owen and Sean start off. I thought that was a good sequence with them too. They have good chemistry. That kind of culminates into all six guys going in there, and Diesel and Taker do a double boot to send Yoko out to the floor, which was a cool spot. And then Yoko and Taker, I thought, were moving good together when they were in the ring together. Taker ended up hitting his DDT when Yoko ducked. Again, following this trend, we had a lot of people hanging out at ringside here.
Right.
Waylon Mercy is our first person that we see. Apparently, he had a non-title match with Diesel on Superstars that week.
Yeah.
So that was... I guess good continuity for all their shows, but it still was weird. Like the way they film them, wrestlers, like that they're just kind of lingering at the entranceway. It looks a little odd. Sean is the face in peril, and right as he goes into face in peril, now we see Dean Douglas. He's out like usual, and he's taking notes. So we have that good power slam by Davey. Owen, as you would expect, is kind of the workhorse for his team in the match. He really kind of instigates a lot of the heat segment on Sean and then tags in and out to both of his guys. Sean eventually makes a hot tag to Diesel, and it's him versus Davey Boy Smith, which was pairing off for the title match at In Your House 4. I thought Bulldog looked really credible. He hits his power slam on Diesel, and Taker had to make the save to prevent that pinfall. And then we get the finish where right after that, Yoko gives a leg drop to Diesel, and Davey Boy covers him again, and now he's pinned the champion. So this was a big win for the heels, and I guess we can get to the post-match stuff after your thoughts on the match, but I thought this was a fun match overall. I ended up going 3 stars. It was really enjoyable and did help set up a lot of stuff for In Your House 4.
I liked the match a lot as well. So early on, Vince confirms we're going to get Shawn Michaels and Dean Douglas at In Your House 4. Well, that's for the IC title. So that explains Dean coming out later. The crowd is super hot for Sean. I thought they were really, really into him, and I liked that start with Owen as well, leading up to the big Pier 6. Yoko getting rattled into the floor and then walking to the post on his own, I thought was kind of funny. It made me chuckle. And Diesel and Yoko battling was neat too, because you don't get to see that often. That's been a matchup they've never really done, so that was kind of cool. Also seeing Yoko and Taker go at it, and then Mercy comes out. You mentioned that non-title match. Waylon actually wins that match by countout on Superstars. When Bulldog comes out and brawls with Diesel, and then Diesel powerbombs Mercy, and I think that's pretty much it for Mercy. I don't think he's around after that, so he kind of goes out with a bang. And it's funny, because I think in my mind and other people's minds, after that loss to Salvio, he was kind of dead in the water. But he ends up doing like his biggest work right after, and that is right around that point. So looks like he's in. He's still working house shows into early October, but I think for all intents and purposes on TV, he's pretty much done. Like, I don't think we see him.
Match. This is October 9th, so the Superstars would have been October 14th. So
yeah, actually, so that is it. Yeah, because October 9th in Germany was his actual. October 10th was his last match.
There we go. So, the air date versus Diesel is probably his last appearance.
It says here he was supposed to be at a couple of things, but I know he ended up walking because of his back. And I know he's said before that in the interview he did with Kevin Kelly on the Kevin Kelly Show, that, you know, he regretted the way he left and all that stuff, that he wasn't feeling right, he was fucked up and kind of took it out on everyone. So I always enjoyed him as a character, obviously. The loss at In Your House 3 was confounding, especially since they seem to still have designs on pushing him here, give him a title match with Diesel in a hyped, TV match. So, anyway. So that's it for him. He's gone. So I don't know if you want to add that to our dropped angles. We can if you want mercy scouting. But I liked there was lots of cool mix and matching here. Yoko really destroys Sean with the Uranagi. Like, I thought that was really cool. Douglas comes out again to take the notes to push his feud with Sean. I thought those were nice touches. Get a real long heat segment on Sean. And then Vince says Sean's actually due on an AOL chat tomorrow night. So I think this is one of the earliest mentions of AOL here in late 95. I know 96 is when it kind of takes off. Their AOL area, but in late 95, like that, I feel like this is real early, like real on the cusp of probably have just gotten underway for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It did feel, early on in Sean's, that's probably a pretty good banner person to be doing a lot of those chats, you know, for a younger audience.
Yeah. And, you know, they'd end up with a pretty big home area, and then WCW, they may have been up and running on CompuServe already too. I don't remember for sure, but I feel like maybe it's been mentioned. I feel like they were actually ahead of WWF, but they went with the CompuServe, which would end up, of course, getting lapped by AOL. But the AOL WWF homepage was like pretty robust early on. Like, they had a whole section of theme songs and stuff that they would push out, and pictures in their galleries and a lot of chat rooms. So I remember I definitely hung out in there quite a bit in the chat rooms and, you know, the early days of fake news that would circulate through there, trying to figure out what was real and what wasn't.
What year were you online?
So it was 96. Like April, May, maybe?
Yeah, because I'm a lot later than that. I'm like 98, 99, early 99. I mean, I was only 12, but yeah. I remember my dad got the AOL and brought it home for our computer. I think it was late 98, because I do remember reading stuff about why Goldberg lost. So it had to have been late 98.
Yeah, mine was, it was definitely early 96, and I was doing both CompuServe and AOL, and we were running the grift of the free AOL discs. I may have told this on air at some point, but I know, or Jen Engel and I way back in the day did a We Missed the 90s on AOL.
Right.
But, you know, we'd run the grift of the free discs, so I don't rotate through names and stuff. But yeah, because we had dial up, right? And it was slow. I didn't really even know what like web pages were until I went to like college. Like for like 2 years, all I did was like pretty much live off AOL, like going to like the different AOL sites. Like,
yeah.
You know, ESPN and WDF and other ones, like they had their own sites and pretty much just worked chat rooms and that was it. Like that was my, and talk to friends. That was my experience on there. So I never went to like a One Wrestling or, you know, some of the early sites until I went to college and Adam Murray introduced me to on an actual, you know, fast internet that we had all of a sudden at college. He's like, oh, you never went to One Wrestling? I'm like, no, I had never been to a web page. My first 2 years was pretty much all just like AOL, whatever the fuck AOL had going on. That's where I was.
Yeah, One Wrestling was my go-to. I was living for the Daily Lariat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when that thing came out, oh, here we go.
Well, especially, like, too, on the, like,
7 pages that took 15 minutes to load, but...
And then especially on, like, a Tuesday when he'd recap Raw and Nitro in there. Like,
yeah,
that
have
was,
it right in there, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. So that was always the big one of the week. The early internet's interesting, especially when it comes to wrestling. We'll kind of have to, once we get to 96, we'll have to talk a little bit more about what they were doing, because it does become a pretty big thing. Vince McMahon does that infamous AOL chat, if you remember, in early 96.
Right.
I think it's late 96. I think it's after, it might be around when the fake, oh no, I think it's when Diesel and Razor leave, so it may be like spring of 96 he does it. He also does the Raw magazine interview, which was interesting at the time, so we'll get to all that. But anyway, I thought it was interesting that he mentioned Sean's on AOL, so caught my ear. Owen had some real crisp offense. I agree with you. He was kind of the workhorse star of this match. Diesel cleans everyone out, and then Bulldog hits the power slam. Yoko drops the leg. Davey gets the win. Real fun match. I like the unique showdowns. I thought it had good fluidity. The star power was awesome. I went 3.25 on this. I really, really liked it. It caught me off guard. I had forgotten how good the match itself was. I remember the aftermath, but never as much the match.
Yeah, so about the aftermath, we get this felt a lot, you know, Bill Watts is in there now. This felt like the most Bill Watts thing I think we've seen so far, where it's a big heel beatdown after the match. Mabel comes in and attacks the Undertaker. Mm-hmm. Mabel and Yoko are now working together, which they'd had some issues before. And then we have Dean Douglas who comes in, attacks Triple H, attacks Shawn Michaels, suplexing him on top of the steps.
And by the way,
if
Mabel's going to work with Yoko anyway, I wonder if he's regretting not taking that triple header slot.
That's true. He refused the slot, and then 2 weeks later is willing to come out for a heel beatdown. But, and then they come back from the break. They go to break kind of in the middle of the chaos, come back from the break, and they're all still laid out. So, as we'll see with the rest of this show, which is practically nothing, they really commit kind of this episode of Raw to presenting the heels getting the best of the faces here, leading into the pay-per-view, which, you know, from a storyline arc of from In Your House 3 to In Your House 4, this was successful. I mean, because it was a neat visual. But as we'll see, as far as a standalone show overall, it kind of slows down the proceedings a good bit here, and it kind of feels like they ran out of ideas.
Yeah. No, I agree with all that you just said. The Mabel thing is odd now that he's working with Yoko. But this is, like, to me, when I think of the Bill Watts run here in late 95, like, this is the calling card segment. Like, the heels all – we've talked about the heels being presented strongly since he showed up. This is like the epic one, right? The heels all band together against the faces and just destroy them and kind of set them all up for big feuds. So this felt very Mid-South Watts-ish here. I liked Douglas coming out and getting involved as well, pushing their issue. And I mean, Taker, Diesel, and Shardus left completely wasted in the ring, like just crushed. I mean, so I like this a lot because it was so unique for the WWF and Raw. Like, I don't know the last time they had a segment like this where, like, the top faces were all just destroyed. I guess maybe Undertaker in Rumble 94 is probably the closest I can think of where, like, the faces were just eviscerated. But even then, it was only one. Like, I'm trying to think of when, like, multiple faces were wrecked by, like, multiple heels. Like, you never really saw that there. This individual stuff, you know, like, nails beating up the Big Boss Man, you know, like stuff like that. But I can't think of any like this where three guys were just completely annihilated by a group of heels.
Yeah, I don't think was there ever any funeral parlor segments like in late 91 where both like Macho and Hogan was neutralized. There was a lot going on in late 91, but nothing kind of comes to me where multiples were laid out.
Right, but like a group of heels. I mean, I can't. Maybe like Hogan and Beefcake with Zeus and Savage like jumped him in the back, but even then it wasn't like three on like six or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
So anyway, my point is this was really unique and real rare. So it really stands out. Like when I think of 95, I mentioned before, like all these Raws I didn't remember because I haven't seen them a ton. This is one I've always remembered just for the. You know, importance of all the six top guys, and then you'd throw Dean Douglas and Mabel and just this crazy, crazy beatdown. So it was really cool to see. I like that they did it. It freshened up Raw, something different. So I thought it was effective, and it set up some feuds. I mean, you got Mercy out there, you got Douglas, you got Mabel, Yoko. You know, like you're setting up all kinds of feuds all in one segment. So I thought it was pretty well done.
Yeah, definitely. So then we get a long clip from the SummerSlam, of Bret Hart and Isaac Yankem. This sets up the cage match next week, and we get kind of some alternative Lawler commentary over the match now. But this was such a long segment. I mean, we get almost the entire match here, which I kind of, again, like, you know, they were saying, well, sorry, we're having to, you know, they sort of like said they were showing this because of the beatdown.
Right.
And like, we're having to recover. So I kind of appreciate that. But I can't tell you how many times when I was watching this on the network, I scrolled over the cursor to see how many more minutes it was in between these dots because, you know, I mean, that's a 2.5-star match or whatever at SummerSlam, and I didn't need to see it again.
Yeah, it's odd. It feels like something that would happen in the final episode of the taping, you know?
Yes.
Not here, but I guess maybe they when they looked at how they were going to parse things out, they said, oh, we're going to hype the cage match. Why not just do it this week, I guess? But it definitely slows down what had been a pretty hot start to the show. Like, I'd rather have just seen 2 minutes of this And even if we just keep going back to the ring and you see all the guys laid out and officials checking them and replaying the beatdown, like, that would have been more effective than reliving this match with Lawler commentary. Which, again, we didn't need that to really hype up the match. So, yeah, that was disappointing. And actually, I went back to look at, like, Graham's site to see if there was something filmed that was cut out, you know, or anything like that. But I don't see anything that would have been cut. So I didn't know if, like, someone had wrestled and they ended up dropping it or, you know, whatever the reason. But I don't see anything there. So I guess it was planned that way, or they finished the taping and realized one of these episodes is going to be short, one or the other. So yeah, I didn't really get it. It was definitely boring. I checked out during most of it, during that segment. And it was just a lot of hype, like you said, to next week's cage match, which, again, I know they're in competition mode. So maybe in their mind, we had our big match tonight. Let's, you know, kind of, I don't know. I'm not as well versed in Mid-South, but I feel like they used to do a lot of heavy promotion for upcoming matches and shows. So maybe they thought, okay, we got our big match out of the way. Now we're going to really focus on hyping next week to get the rating again against WCW, and we're going to hype up Brett Yanko as much as possible. Now, I don't know if showing a mediocre match is the best way to do it. You know, this probably a Brett match here would have been better or something. But one thing I wanted to mention just real quick too, in that beatdown in that last segment, Mabel broke Undertaker's orbital bone with the leg drop. I think we'll probably talk about that to come, but he ends up being out of action now for a couple months. So we'll see how the ramifications play out in your house. He's supposed to fight Mabel there, but we'll see what comes of it. But yeah, he gets fucked up and it's pretty messed up. So
yes, that's a big off-screen issue there. So that kind of then leads us into our second match of the night, which is Skip and Making a Difference Fatu.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot going on here either.
Color me bad, Fatu. Wants to sex you up.
Yeah, Fatu has the early advantage. I did think Sonny was a little more competent here than in previous weeks we've seen. Fatu misses a charge into the corner.
And then he sings, "I adore me more," to Sonny.
Skip is sort of disappointing me here. Yeah. I don't know if I think my memory of him was he was presented more prestigiously, and he's really not at all. And he doesn't do anything to stand, you know, like,
right.
He could stand out by being dynamic, and Candido's a great bumper, but, like, on top here, like, he didn't do anything interesting. He does go for a diving headbutt, but, you know, Fatu is Samoan. So that actually is the precipice for his comeback, like where he starts his comeback once the headbutt happens. He drags up, allowing Skip to regain the advantage, but Skip goes for a superplex, gets punched down, and then 5-2 wins with the big splash. I thought this was just a filler match. Felt kind of like a Superstars main event match, to be honest. So only went like a star here. And again, I'm making the difference. Fatu didn't seem to have much of a reaction from the crowd, and Skip is really one of the lowest wrestlers on the totem pole in the company right now. That's not just a straight jobber.
Yeah, he's
like
definitely
Brian Walsh.
He's definitely bottom of the barrel. I think things pick up for him a little bit when he gets into the tag team. Like, they're presented a little bit more seriously. But no, almost as soon as he loses to Horowitz, he's pretty much just a joke, and that was almost immediate. So they are not, like, treating him with much respect at all. He had the fun match with Jannetty a couple weeks ago, at least. That was something. But at this point, yes, he's just a jobber to the stars, really, with a real hot manager. And like you said, Sonny was real active or inside, which is cool. Vince shills the World Tour de Force loop that was going around the house shows. Yes. Always a mark when they named the house show tours. I like that. Decent babyface fire, I thought, an offense from Fatu. Sonny helps distract and turn the tide. And then Skip hurts his hand, like you said, punching Fatu. That was kind of goofy. We do a chin lock, slowing things down, get more talk about next week. Skip then does a flying headbutt, again hurts his own head. Vince calls him an idiot, which made me laugh. What an idiot! and then he regains control. He's hanging in, hurts himself trying to superplex. Fatu splashes for the win. It was okay, but there was a lot of silliness. And like you said, Skip's really just a comedy goof. He deserves better, but... He's DOA already. I want a star on this too. Any change in your mind on Fatu at all, or still just kind of a goofy character?
No, I mean, I just don't think it's a great... It's one of those characters that I can see the reasoning and the sentiment. You know, okay, yeah, this is... I don't know how to phrase it. Like, it's... I guess, like, the thought process, I understand it, but I just think as a moment in time, it was destined to fail.
Yeah.
Like, that was a character that, you know, if that had came on a couple years later, he'd have certainly been booed out the building. Like, right. At least here, he was respected. You know, the fans were respectful. They weren't turning on him. But it's also not the type of character where everybody's going to get that behind, I don't think, either.
Well, the problem is he kind of stops doing anything. Like, the vignettes hyping him
stops
up.
Stops making a difference.
Yeah, well, the vignettes hyping him up had him all, you know, in the inner city and showing what he's doing.
Right.
And then, like, so many other people in the stretch, they show up, and they're not doing anything, like, character-wise. It's just like they establish these gimmicks, and then that's it. So we're past at least, like, the garbage man and that stuff, but we're still getting these gimmicks where there's no progression. Like, what is Fatu, like, is he trying to help someone in a heel, runs him down and attack? You know, he just becomes a guy on the roster that we're told makes a difference in his community, but we don't see much of it anymore. I know there's an angle that kicks off at some point. I think we'll probably see hints of it, and then it gets dropped, which we'll talk about, which I think they were trying to do something with his making a difference angle. But overall, he's just a guy.
They could... Now, Drosy's still up ahead, right?
No. He's... Oh. Well, we will see him. He pops back up, okay. But he debuted in, like, early 94.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. So, but at least with Fatu, it wasn't one of those weird things like, okay, he's a garbage man, or he's a baseball player, or a NASCAR driver, and now he's a wrestler one random night. Like, why?
Right.
You know, what's the connection there? Plumber. But, I just think it's like a C-minus level gimmick that mm-hmm. he was strapped with, and he didn't. I mean, and as we see with Rikishi, Fatu was capable of elevating something that he was given with that wasn't, you know, much, but not with this one.
All right, so we go backstage to Doc.
Yeah, Doc gives a big report. He says... It's not a good time to talk to any of the faces we saw tonight. He said, like, what did he say? He said, like,
Taker took the worst of it.
Yeah, Taker took the worst of the blow. Diesel's, like, I think, like, basically trashing backstage, which is probably a shoot with the click. So they just basically don't show any of the faces, just say they're rattled, you know. So they took a beating and are rattled. Then we do another interview with Cornette and Davey Boy Smith.
Oh, this is great.
Cornette's outfit was unfortunate, but the sentiment was here, where Davey Boy Smith was being a complete clown. You know,
so good. I thought he was real funny.
He was so delightful in his attack that he was in. Fucking pivot. But basically, him and Cornette give a great gloating promo to end the episode, and I thought this was a good way to top off the episode.
And Bulldog with the hat on just made me laugh. He's got his hat on. Yeah, he's all fucking smiles. And Cornette was just great, just ranting on Bulldog never got a shot, and he's getting it now. He deserved one. They're just on fire, like, overall. And then Bulldog calls Winnipeg a 50 below hellhole, which made me laugh. And Cornette says Bulldog's hat was a gift from Princess Di. Mabel then comes in to celebrate. He says Bulldog's his homie, and they talk shit on Undertaker. You could just tell, like, again, the Watts stuff is just, like, the camaraderie between the heels and the faces. Like, they're really drawing lines in the sand, where we're almost getting this mega stable built up of all the heels, and Cornette's kind of like the mastermind, and they're coming in from all over the place, and they're all aligned, and they're all working together to take out Diesel and Shawn and Undertaker, which I thought was a nice way to do things. Like, I liked it. I really enjoyed the way they're positioning stuff. We'll see how long it lasts. But I thought this all hyped In Your House really well throughout the night.
Yeah. I mean, the hyped In Your House 4, I mean, it's much maligned. We'll get there, but the hype going in's been fine. So
yeah,
there we have it. We actually talked about that more than I thought we would, but That is the 10-9 Raw. Let's get to our awards match of the night. It's pretty easy. It's the 6-man.
Yes.
Segment of the night. Did you consider the beatdown, or what did you go for that?
Yeah, I went the beatdown. I thought that was the best segment. I mean, I separate it from the match, so I think it's fine to put it there. And there was really nothing else going on, so easy choice. I mean, the promo at the end was real good. So, like, if you consider the beatdown part of the match, then I would go with that promo. But I think the beatdown was on its own. That was separate.
Yeah, I ended up going with the Cornette interview. I thought him and Davey just really looked credible, and mm-hmm. I love a good heel gloating promo. But, yeah, I mean, those are, I think, your two clear winners. Your MVP... Who was your choice there?
I went with Bulldog. He got the win on Diesel. He's got the great promo at the end. And they've done such a great job. We've seen it all play out from his heel turn to here, like just really establishing him as a top player. Like they've pushed him hard.
Yeah, I had Sean originally because I liked the bump he took on the steps and he was the face in peril. But I am changing mine to Bulldog now on the fly. Because he gets the big pin and he was gloating. I think he has more of a lasting image mm-hmm. For the show overall. Commentary, I didn't get a lot.
I have a few.
Okay.
One was King saying Helen Hart was there. She's the one that looked like she went through a food dehydrator. Vince at one point says romp 'em, stomp 'em, which always makes me laugh.
Yeah, there we go.
And then what an idiot when he says to skip.
Yeah, that one's a good one. I didn't funny. Catch that, but that's a good one.
What an idiot!
No shots fired. Nope. No debuts. We will call whatever's going on with Waylon Mercy our dropped angle.
Okay.
And they scored a 2.6 tonight. So what was your overall grade for this show?
So it's a little bit behind some of the ones we've been watching and, you know, mainly because of the Brett Yankum, like the rest of the show was good, but that really sucked up a lot of the middle, but on the strength of the 6-man, the heel beatdown and the Bulldog promo, which is a big chunk of the show, all carried things. I went 5.5. If we didn't just have a replay of a mediocre match, it probably would have been higher, but that kind of dragged things in the middle. But overall, I really, you know, enjoyed at least the first, whatever, third of the show plus the promo at the end.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I went 5 out of 10, and it's really a tale of two shows. Again, mm-hmm. I get the from a storytelling perspective why they did what they did, but, I mean, yeah, the first half of the show is really good, and then it, you know, slows to a crawl, and then you get the final 5 minutes or whatever that ramps stuff back up, which is nice. But yeah, I mean, overall it's just a standalone show. I went 5 out of 10 there.
All right, so that's it for Raw. Before we get to Nitro, Chad, really quick, just wanted to talk PlaySummation.com. A lot of stuff going on. You know, as some of you may have picked up by now, obviously we're starting to see activity kind of ramp back up, and that's by design. We're trying to you know, get refocused and start to deliver the content that was, you know, we had a lot of fans, a lot of visitors, and trying to, you know, refresh that. We have a lot of new members on the staff and coming up with some ideas. Tyler Kelly kind of kicked off the GWWE tag team content today. He has a cheat sheet number one, looking at a handful of teams that he started to dive into some random matches for. Also, last night, me, Scott, and John D'Amato looked at WrestleMania 4. So that was kind of cool revisiting that. You can check out the newest Marvel Age Masterclass that's hosted by Ben Morris. Of course, this week he had Todd Weber with him, and they were looking basically that's a reaction show for the Marvel Age podcast. So always enjoyable. And then one other thing I wanted to call out, which I was really kind of happy with how it came out, and that was our PTBN roundtable review of Money in the Bank. Instead of doing a straight review with play-by-play and all that stuff, what we're doing is the staff is all pretty much being divvying up all the matches and giving quick thoughts on each match per person, like I did Daniel Bryan Cass. So I thought that really came out well. I liked the different voices, so you're not just reading one person reviewing. So you get Stacy, you know, making a snow all over the women's matches. You get the cowboy mailing it in on Lashley, Sami Zayn. So, you know, you get a lot of different things. But I thought that was cool. I liked how it came out, and that plays off of our thinking when it comes to reviews that was shown in the first piece that Scott Grimes did last week, which he'll be doing weekly every Thursday, is the week in TV, WWE TV recap. And he's going to watch Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, but we're not getting play-by-play. We're not getting every segment reviewed. It's just like what worked, what didn't work, what were the big moments that you want to go back and watch, you know, match of the week, et cetera, et cetera. So I like that format. He did a great job. So All that content is out there at PlayStation.com with much more to come, both on the audio feeds and the website. Plus, we got a cool new banner thanks to Jeff Jarvis, which is cool as well. So, anything there you want to cover that I missed?
Just that the next time the cowboy takes a match assignment, you may want to offer him up boneheads as an incentive for his upright.
Well, it's funny because I kind of questioned it because he was here and he hasn't moved yet. So he still lives like a while, you know, a ways away. And right. We had an all hands meeting Monday at work that was like 2 hours and then a team meeting. And I'm like, maybe you should write this in my house. Like I wrote mine like while the show was going on. And I'm like, you know, but he had his nephew with him who's become a diehard wrestling fan. So he was here. And so, and then we got out of the meeting and I'm like, it's all right. You know, we're still waiting on a couple. And he's like, all right, I'll do it now. And luckily he picked a match that was pretty much just a squash. It worked out.
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing anyway.
So we'll have to think of the best way to deploy the cowboy going forward. But it's, but anyway, we got a lot of cool stuff planned. There'll be some of your old favorites. There's a tournament in the works as well. So a lot of cool stuff on the way.
Yeah, we don't need Cowboy when Yoshirai debuts and Cowboy calls her a nobody like he did Furnace and LaFon. We don't need that either.
That's true. Fucking Furnace and LaFon. Okay. Anyway, visit PlayStation.com. We'll talk more about the feeds at the end of the show, but I just wanted to give a shout out to the written content that went up over the last few days.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, if you're reading, by the time you're listening to this, guess what else has returned? Is Seinfeld, Chad. We're back at it. So we're going to finally finish this thing. We get into season 9, but cannot let it die. We got to finish it. So
still with Flanagan.
There's only 3 that remain and Flanagan is one.
Oh my goodness.
His was the first in. He's on it. He's locked in.
The PTB in administrator himself. Andrew
Flanagan's Follies. Still at it. It's me, Aaron and Andrew are standing tall. So we lost 2 along the way, but we're going to finish. We're going to finish it up.
Yo, y'all are, what, it's season 8, what episode?
No, we're 9. We're 9.
4. Oh, y'all are at 9.
So, yeah, we only got, like 17 left to do, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got to finish.
No problem.
Can't get this far and not finish, so. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, why don't we talk about some Nitro?
All right. Well, we're in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about, like, when did they go to the bigger arenas? Well, it's happened. They're right in the Rosemont here. I saw some attendance of 8,500. I mean, it looked like a pretty big crowd.
Yeah.
So that seemed good. At the beginning, no Pepe, which was sad. But they rectified that by the end of the show. all the announcers are wearing bear gear, though.
Oof. And Bobby is like poured into his. He's got a question mark on his.
Right. That was my note. Bobby's jersey has a question mark as the number, which I thought was, I didn't quite understand, but it was funny nonetheless. it didn't quite make sense, but it was funny. So go with it.
And I mean, he is not looking healthy in that jersey, and it's tucked into his khakis that are jacked up to his waist. So, like, it's just, right, such a weird, like, they're all tucked in, but at least with Mongo, he's like kind of built, so it looks good. And Bischoff's thin, but for Bobby, it just looks like so slobbery.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like the guy at B-Dubs fucking watching the game in his jersey pretty much.
Yeah. He basically tells Cornette to hold his beer with how he was looking earlier with his performance.
Hold the fucking cheeseburger, the wedges.
So, like, Flair crashed the set the week before. Sting comes out and crashed the set tonight. And he says the stuff between Savage and Luger has to change. And he thinks he's got the problem solver. He's the problem solver. He
can solve it.
Can solve that problem tonight. So, there we go.
If you get a problem, I'll solve it.
Right, there you go. So that leads us right into our first match, but not before Eric tells us, make no mistake about it, this is the place to be.
Yes, I popped.
A great, great drop for a certain show website conglomerate. So that was nice. And, whereas Raw really took it easy after the heel beatdown, this Nitro is really frantic.
Oh, yeah. That's been the calling card of Nitro for the most part.
Like, I thought this was the even up a notch, though. I thought this was the most frantic one.
I think they're getting good at seeing, like, the one really good thing that WCW and Bischoff did with crafting Nitro is really studying Raw, I think, and looking at, like, what the opportunity and the gaps were, like, what they could fill.
Yeah.
And one of it was Raw feels stale and tiny, and Nitro is going to be big, grand, bright, and live. Like, Raw seems kind of dark right now. You know, it's kind of in these little arenas. They're not lit great. Nitro is going to be in these bigger arenas, not all huge, but bigger. It's going to be lit up, you know, big pack crowd, wild atmosphere, live, quick paced, in, out, you know, like all stuff going on, all big matches. So I thought that was like a real shrewd move by them in the way they've been handling the show.
These definitely felt like two really different shows. Yeah. Watching them back to back.
They feel like two different years.
Yeah. Two different. Definitely. So our first match is Sting versus Shark. Really quick. I don't even know if it went 2 minutes. Shark attacks Sting before he can kind of get in the ring.
This match went, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So Shark attacks Sting before he can kind of get settled, misses a corner charge. We get a Stinger splash from Sting, and then he goes to the top and hits a crossbody to win. I wrote here, yeah, in about a minute. So, I mean, it was energetic for a minute, but it was a minute. Shark, as you can see, is toast. Mm-hmm. And a decent win for Sting. He looked okay. His big moves looked energetic and fun. So, I mean, a quarter star, but basically this was like a showcase for Sting.
Yeah, I dug it. Shark's knockoff Jaws music is something. Yeah, it was an odd beat. Shark looked aggressive in the 30 seconds he had the offense, which I thought was good. And then Sting gets a quick win. Not much here, but I don't know. I thought it was kind of fun while it lasted. Like, I wish they had, like, even 4 minutes. You know, like, I think they had a nice sprint. I went a half a star just because, like, you're told you have a minute 15 and you could just kind of half-ass it, but they didn't. Like, Shark made the most out of his, like, 45 seconds or a minute, whatever he had on top. And I liked it. I liked the energy. I thought that combined with Sting's promo to start the show really got the things cranking. So I gave him a little bit extra credit for really bringing the energy to what could have just been a lazy squash.
I looked it up on Wikipedia, and I can't remember now exactly how old he was, but I think Tenta around this time was only like 32 or 33, which I'm going to be 32 in a couple of months, and it was just shocking to me that we would be the same age as what I saw on my television screen.
So he was born in 1963, so yeah.
Yeah, 32. Yeah. He's got like, he's 5 years or, what is it, 5 years your junior or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and he looks like he's like 50. It's the bald head. I mean, that's what it is. It's the going that bald at that young is
right.
The big part.
Yeah, it's the deaf call. So, I mean, it was fun for what it was for a minute. And then we got a rundown of the Hogan angle from last week, a lot quicker than the Yankum Brett stuff we saw. And then that leads us into our second match, which looked pretty intriguing on paper. It is Sabu versus Mr. JL. Mm-hmm. Jerry Lynn for the uninformed. And third punch he sends had a nice snap to it that you could hear. The commentators actually pick up on that. Sabu falls that up with a somersault leg drop, and the crowd's starting to pop pretty big for him. We get a Hogan sucks chant in the middle of this match, which was surprising, but it is Chicago. JL sends Sabu to the outside. It falls up with a tope. Sabu comes back, hits a somersault dive to the outside, and JL just goes like flying back into the guardrail. He took a nasty bump off that. We get some chance for Sabu. He hits the chair springboard kick on the outside. Back inside the ring, JL gets the advantage with a German suplex and then a nice drop kick in the corner. But then he misses a charge. Sabu comes back, hits the springboard moonsault and the choke. And then we go straight to the finish where Sabu misses a Rana from the ropes, but hits JL coming down with a powerbomb and locks on the choke again for the win. So they packed a lot into this match. This, I think, was sub 5 minutes, too. Just a ton, you know, two guys going out there and emptying out the arsenal. So there you have it. I thought the crowd really got behind Sabu. He feels dangerous and different. In retrospect, 23 years, you know, past this match, it certainly didn't look as clean as it probably looked at its time. I mean, some of the execution is dated and sloppy, but overall it was enjoyable. It's really cool to see two young guys go out there and give it their all to create a reaction. So I ended up going 2.5 on this match.
Yeah, I liked it, even though we started off with some detailed monster truck fighting talk. Things get started. We get a lot of that. But yeah, fun match on paper. And it's exciting and cool that WCW can throw this match out there. You know what I mean? Like, this is another thing that WWF is lacking. Just on the undercard, guys are not even getting pushed, but they can throw a match out with fucking Sabu and Jerry Lynn just on their undercard. So it really, again, makes WCW stand out above the WWF at this point. Both guys, they really went all out with the time that they have. The somersault senton by Sabu was real nice. I like the chair leap kick. The belly to back into the bridge by Jerry Lynn was really nice, too. Sabu, it's a hard clothesline. And I really like the hanging DDT by JL. I thought that had some nice snap to it. And both guys really just emptied the chamber in this one. They did not hold anything back with the brief time they had. And the finish was good, too, as Sabu blocks the dive into the choke. And then after the match, he hits a sunset flip powerbomb just for shits and giggles after the bell. It's funny, like, it's not a normal beatdown move you would think of, but he just does it anyway. And this was fun. It was a wild sprint. It was unique for WCW. Great buzzing in the crowd for it, like you said. I went 2.25, and I enjoyed this. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a good bit. And Sabu, I mean, he feels like somebody they should do something with, so there you have it. And then our next thing is our interview segment, right, where Sting and Luger are in the ring. Sting calls for Savage to come out.
Yep.
Savage is wearing, I guess that would be called a tiger print? I don't know.
I think it was a leopard. I think it was a leopard.
Leopard, tiger, little risque for the Macho Man.
I thought it looked fucking awful. Like, it was all entirely leopard. Like, if he had leopard panties on underneath, it would not surprise me. Like, it was just everything was leopard.
From the Jimmy Snuka collection.
Yes, it was not flattering at all.
But Savage, of course, is very paranoid. And he calls out Sting, asking why the Giant hasn't put his hands on him since everybody else is getting choke slammed. I thought Sting was really good in this segment, mm-hmm. where after Savage makes that accusation, Sting calls him out and says, look, you're being really paranoid.
Right.
And telling him to shut up. And then he says if both Luger and Savage win their respective matches at Halloween Havoc, they should fight then. Which is kind of weird because I don't know how that solves anything, but okay. But then we get a little bit of a back and forth where Luger says Sting's putting words in his mouth. Sting mimics what Luger says and says he doesn't look like the total package to him. But at the end of the day, they do both agree to Sting's proposition.
Yeah, this is fun as usual. These have kind of been some of the highlights of Nitro week to week. And this was my memory, and I'm glad it's held up, like how these segments and these promos have been a lot of fun. Yeah, Sting just called Savage. Well, he says Giants winning the game, and then he calls Savage insecure, says everyone wants to be champion, but tells him to shut up and not to slap anyone. And then, yeah, he lays down the gauntlet. Lex is kind of like, I don't know. And this thing just shames him and calls him disgusting for acting like a pussy, basically. So Luger says, fuck it, all right, I'm in. These three have had real good chemistry, especially the weeks without Hogan involved. When it's just Sting, Savage, and Luger, you get a lot of good back and forth and a lot of good ambiguity. All three guys could either be heels or faces in a lot of what they're saying. So it's been some of my favorite stuff week to week.
Yeah, so this was another, maybe not the tip-top best segments of these we've seen, but another solid segment. Then we see a limo pull up and Chris Benoit coming out. He says, WCW, this is where the big boys play. I thought Eric actually did a pretty good job putting him over.
Yes.
Talking about how, his accolades in Japan and whatnot. So
yeah, he really puts him over big.
This was just a kind of a quick introduction to him, and he'll be in action next week for us. Then I think Disco Inferno's music fires up and Eric is immediately appalled. We had a fun moment though. The next match is Halt versus Big Bubba. Fun mm-hmm. moment happens where Bubba's music starts and then Disco has a boombox with his theme. He just keeps dancing. I enjoyed that.
That was really funny.
That was actually really clever and funny. I mean, Disco again is a buffoon, but I mean, he's committed and he's getting himself somewhat over with that kind of go away heat he's aspiring to have. So we have Hawk versus Big Bubba. Hawk gets the huge pop and intimidates Disco. Bubba hits, I thought, some rough kicks and then audibly calls a spot. It was kind of a rough night for Trailer. And then Hawk hits a power slam. Disco's still dancing around. Hawk rips the shirt off of Disco and then sends Disco into the rail up the ring. But ends up getting counted out. So Bubba ends up winning this match somehow. And probably the best thing Bubba does in this match is, as soon as he gets counted out, you can see, like, the camera angle is going down the aisle, so you can see Bubba in the ring realizing he's about to win. And as soon as he does, he, like, lifts his hands both in the air triumphantly, which was pretty funny. But, yeah, there was nothing to this match either, so I went a quarter star here.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing going on. Interesting match on paper. Big pop for Hawk. Disco also steals a random WCW hat from a fan and puts that on Hawk's spike, which was funny as he was coming down the aisle. Bubba attacks and unloads some power offense. Eric says we haven't seen Hawk since his arm got broken by Kurosawa. This is his return. We get more Hogan talk mixed in here as well. Nice power slam by Hawk, and then Disco shows up and Hawk gets mad, beats him up, and gets counted out. So really weak random finish. Like, why? I don't know why Hawk just couldn't go over. But anyway, is what it is. But for a while it lasted, it was fine enough. I don't know, quarter star, like you said.
And then next is our big Hulk Hogan interview. We've officially entered the black stage of Hogan, where he's wearing all black, including the neck brace. He's not a thug though. He talks about beating Andre at Pontiac and says he'll do the same to his son. He says that no good stinky giant. Gene tells Hogan that Giant has been barred from Rosemont. So Hogan gives a nice analogy where he equates having his mustache shaved as burning of the American flag. And then he also talks about beating Gorgeous George in heaven. So this was a real out there. A real out there Hogan promo where I thought, you know, when he came out in the black, I was actually pretty excited. I thought we might have some kind of more of an edge to him. But it was still cartoony. Backstage, Giant shows up in his monster truck with Zodiac.
Oh, so good.
Out of the sunroof.
Zodiac hanging out of the fucking sunroof is like the highlight of anything we've seen so far. It's so good. Because he's hanging out on the sunroof, but he's doing his little stupid fucking arm thing where he's like holding. I love Zodiac as like Giant's fucking foot soldier. Like, that's been his best role so far. And Sullivan's hanging out the window like a fucking dog.
And can you imagine seeing this like set up on the road too? Like, if you were just a passerby, see like this freaking monster truck and Zodiac just hanging out of the. Before they did the cut. So Hogan leaves to confront him, and we get the machine versus machine graphic morphing. So what did you think of this interview overall? I thought it was fairly poor.
Yeah, I was waiting for Hogan to bust into tears in heaven. Would you know my name when I beat Gorgeous George in heaven? Random fucking thing to talk about. He's such a nutball. He's such a weirdo. So we definitely get some booze mixed in for these guys. Hogan's dressed all in black with the neck brace, like you said. Jimmy's in black, too. And then Hogan is like doing this where he's like, oh God, he's so fucking fake and over the top. Like, you better both keep your mouth shut. You know, like he's just a loser kid who's trying to act fucking tough and cool. And he just comes across as so fucking cheesy and fake. Like, this is what a tough guy acts like. I'm going to tell you guys to keep your mouth shut. You know, the games are over. I'm going to take care of the family business. Like you said, he's going to beat his, big stinky giant son, like he did Andre. And then, the Zodiac thing is just fucking epic. Just him in the freaking sunroof is great. but yeah, so forced and dated for Hogan. Like, I am not enjoying him at all in any of this. It's just so, I don't know what happened. I don't know when he went so over the top comically bad with his acting, but it has happened and it is awful. Like, he's just, it's just way too much.
Yeah, it's over the top, so that's disappointing. And, you know, we'd seen the Giant do a lot the previous weeks, and he did nothing here, so right. That was disappointing, too. We get Pyro for the cage match as we head to break, come back from the break, and Pepe is here.
Yes.
He's wearing a Bears jersey and a little helmet, settling in for the main event tonight. And our main event, of course, is Arn Anderson versus Ric Flair in a steel cage. Flair starts out heavy.
Well, actually, before that, it's one other thing. The police come and talk to Bischoff, and he says that Hogan and Giant are being kept apart by a ton of police. So, I just picture the entire Chicago police force like keeping these guys apart.
The whole force is separating the machine versus machine and man versus man out there. So Flair starts out heavy as we head to break with some chops and punches. As we come back, Arn hits a spine buster. We see during the break Flair chopping Arn on the cage where he crutches himself, and then Flair's on the attack as Flying Brian comes out trying to get into the cage. Flair beats him at the pass and then hits a double axe handle on Arn. Flair starts working on the leg now to set up the figure four, but Arn's able to power out of that and punches him with a foreign object and gets another pin. So this is Arn's now 2-0 versus the Nature Boy. This was another surprising end. I mean, I liked what they did here, but I thought this was a pretty brief cage match. It was mainly just like another chapter in their story, so I ended up going 2 stars. You know, not a lot to it, but it was enjoyable for the time it had.
Yeah, it was fine. I like the cage idea. Bischoff says normally you have to buy a pay-per-view for a match like this. I thought that was a nice little shot. Flair is hot early. Arn chokes and goes to the eye, showing the viciousness that has really crept into the feud. Like, it started kind of, I don't want to say friendly, but it was really just Arn trying to prove himself out of Flair's shadow, and now it's starting to get more anger or violence into it. And Bischoff is really pounding the whole Flair has no friends and all that. Like, that story's continuing here. A lot of good stiff strikes by both guys. The crowd is super hot for Flair. Pillman comes out, like you said. Arn uses the foreign object, gets to win. Arn's really getting a big rub in this feud. And just really slaying it throughout all of it. Like, he's really taking advantage of the opportunity. And I just didn't think we got enough of the match. The commentary is distracted, as usual. So I thought there could have been more here that we didn't get, but it was still good. And then Flair, after, challenges Pillman and Arn to a handicap match while he's looking for a partner. So he's going to try and make it a tag, but he wants at least a handicap match. And I thought at the end, too, they do a real long recap. So, like Raw, do you feel like they didn't format things well? Because they sit there and talk for a while after.
They talk for a while, and they also show Hogan after that. I did like Flair said he didn't care about the Bears when he went to the announce booth. That was humorous. Kind of a shot at Mongo. But, yeah, I usually we have seen, like, maybe a minute or two of them at the booth at the end of the show. This was probably about 3 or 4 minutes. So maybe they kind of was short a couple other areas.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much that. So that sets up next week with the handicap match. I think Bischoff does run down our other matches for the week, and we're out.
That's it.
So let's get into our awards. Your match of the night.
Oh, I went 2.5 on Flair Arn, by the way.
Okay, yeah. There we go. So our your match of the night, was it that?
Yes, yep, 2.5 for Flair Arn.
Okay.
Slight tick over Sabu.
And I went Jerry Lynn and Sabu as my match of the night, segment of the night. I only see one contender, which is the Savage Luger Sting interview.
Yep,
correct.
That's what I went with,
okay.
Yeah.
Not the Hogan, not maybe Zodiac popping out of the sunroof. the MVP, who'd you go with there?
I went with Arn. Again, he gets the big win on the night and stands tall, and he's just really gotten such a good rub off of all of this. I hadn't given him MVP yet. I thought he's deserved one of these, and I didn't think anyone else really stood out. Maybe he could go with Sting, but I thought Arn, it was really his night, so I wanted to give him the credit.
Okay, I did in fact go with Sting, just because I liked him kind of, I don't know, Sting, there's just not a ton of serious promos with him that I thought he kind of holds his own, and I thought him standing up to Savage, he didn't look small in that moment, and looked good, and telling him he's paranoid and to shut up, I enjoyed that. We got 2 debuts, Mr. JL and Chris Benoit. Pepe was wearing the Bears jersey and helmet, and this also scored a 2.6, so they tied.
Mm.
For the week, which is pretty interesting. And yeah. What is your overall grade for this edition of Nitro?
I went 6.5 out of 10. Do we do the commentary, though? I got a couple here.
Oh, yeah, go with the commentary. Right. I thought this was kind of a subdued Mongo line, actually.
It was. I got a couple here. Bischoff saying this is the place to be. That was good.
Yes.
Obviously. This guy's trying to give me a chafe, Mongo says about Disco. Heenan saying there's so many cops out here that are filming F Squad. And what are the chances of them coming to your home? Actually, wait, hang on. Sorry. I have Barry Dudinsky, so that must have been a Raw quote that I left in there. What's the chance of them coming to your home? I don't know what the fuck. Oh, is that the I wonder if that's the next week on Raw. I think it is. I think he does like these cardboard cutouts and he says, what are the chances this guy would actually come to your house? It's pretty funny. We'll catch talk about that next week. I put it in the wrong box. But anyway, I do have a shots fired. Did you get anything there?
No, I actually thought this was probably the most respectful Eric had been, but what do you know?
I have a Hogan quote during his promo. He says, "A long time ago, I was in the NYC area, and the promoter's ego got bigger than the business. As Hogan pulled his troops out as we speak, the promoter's dying and choking on his own ego." Hogan says that during his dark promo.
That's actually a pretty good line. Yeah. I think I was distracted by the other nonsense, but that one's not bad. Again, not really relevant to what's going on, but okay.
So I went 6 out of 10. Pretty much tied with our other best shows. It's the highest grade we've given so far, at least I've given so far. I really like it. I thought all the matches were pretty good, and I thought it cruised along. We got some good angle development. The promo was good. We get Zodiac in the fucking sunroof. There's a lot to like here, so 6.5 for me.
Yeah, I'm just a tick lower than you. I went 6 out of 10. A real quick watch. About the only thing that's a negative is I didn't think we had a true, like, good match. But otherwise, a pretty enjoyable episode of Nitro.
And then debuts was JL, and I guess, are we counting Benoit for this week?
Yeah, I think okay. So. I mean, he came out of the limo and everything. So.
Okay, and no dropped angles.
No. Okay. So now we can go into our combined awards. You'll have to lead this. My computer just died on me, so I'm in the dark.
No
officially
problem.
In the dark here.
All right, our best show, I have Nitro. Of course,
yep, yep, agree. Yep.
Best match I thought was the six-man.
Yep, agree.
Best segment. Do you want to go? I mean, I know you didn't pick it to win Raw. I would probably go with the heel beatdown. I thought that was the most effective at getting everyone over for the night.
I can go with that. I mean, that'll probably be, of these two shows, that's probably the biggest lasting memory was that. Yeah.
Better commentary this week.
I would say closer than maybe it's been so far.
I might lean Nitro this week, to be honest with you. I thought they were more locked in, even with throughout the Hogan stuff. Raw, you have the whole... And they're okay. Vince had the funny, this guy's an idiot line and everything. And it's pretty close. But I kind of soured during the Brett Yankum thing. Even though there were some funny bits, but...
Yeah, that made me check out. So I have no problem going Nitro. I mean, and at least Bischoff, like, he had annoying tendencies here, but he also, like, him putting over Benoit, and the first half was Sabu match, they were a little shaky, but they did, you know, I think put over the danger of him
right. A
good bit in the second half. So, congrats, guys, you get your first W.
And then finally, star of the night, I think I'm going Bulldog.
Over
Stinger on there. He had a huge night. And then the ratings was a tie. So back-to-back weeks with ties for Raw and Nitro.
Right.
So.
All right,
there you have it. Another episode of the books. We'll be back on our next episode looking at the week of 10-16. So that'll be the go-home for In Your House 4 on Raw. And then Nitro, we have some interesting matches coming up there as well, including the big Willie Woney, Flair have a partner against Arn and Pillman. So we'll take a look at that. As we inch toward Halloween Havoc. PlayStation.com, we mentioned earlier. Make sure you subscribe to our feeds, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. I mentioned PlayStation Podcast dropped earlier this week, as well as me and Aaron finishing up our Made the Cut series. A year after we did our first pod blast, me and Aaron, we did our final show on our GWWE list to the day. So there you go. It's a tidy year of audio for me and Aaron on that.
I don't know if I've... listen to much of a podcast series where 1 minute I'm very excited at what Mr. George has to say because I'm in complete agreeance, and then the next minute I am just flabbergasted that somebody could actually think that opinion that he just prognificated.
It's quite the ride.
Yes, it is.
We usually do it at like fucking 11:30 midnight or whatever, so it's like even more...
Yeah.
Cracked
yeah.
out.
Definitely.
But yeah, so check those out. Great audio up almost every day on those feeds. And of course, shop with us too, PlayStation.com/Amazon. Be sure to like our Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and search Wrestling Warzone, it'll come up. And I always forget the actual, I can get you the actual URL here. Facebook.com/. Do you know it? Let me see.
No.
Hang on, I'm pulling it up. Wrestling War... Oh, come on, you bitch. All right, it's facebook.com/PTBN Wrestling Warzone. So that's our official Facebook page. We have discussion going on there almost daily. You know, if you have any feedback, you can post it there as well for us to read on air as we go along. Especially, I think the pay-per-views will probably get more of that, I'm guessing, as we move forward versus the TV, which probably people aren't as familiar with. But we did have one piece of feedback, Chad. I'll read it real quick from Jay Hinchy. Said, ah, yes, the infamous six-man tag on Raw, the week where Taker gets his face smashed, post-match by Mabel and Yokozuna, maybe the biggest main event on Raw to that point. I imagine you guys would agree with that, perhaps, at least up there with Sean and Marty in 93 and Brett and Kidd in 94. I think he's got a decent claim here. I think Flair Perfect is in the conversation as well on one of those early episodes. But I think this is in the top 5 to 10, probably the biggest matches in Raw so far.
Yeah, I mean, they hadn't really had any other big, like, world title matches, had they?
No, not really.
So, I mean, because even, like, I mean, Brett Kidd, that's a great match, right. But...
Not a big star power match.
Right. I mean, you knew Brett was going to win. So
yeah, this could be even a top three when you look at pure star power. So,
right.
All right. So thanks, Jay. Thank you for commenting and listening. We appreciate it. But definitely. Oh, yeah.
Maybe people will watch that Hill Beatdown. I mean, because I think that's something that, like, in the confines of what we watched so far, it was so tonally different, too. And, you know, just now, like, you know, like, I'm in, like, the Rousey segment. Raw felt a little different and got praised, and something like this, I mean, I think would get praised too if people just watch that segment, because it's well done and they really present the heels as big threats going into In Your House 4, which is, I mean, I'm surprised and I'm excited to watch In Your House 4, but
that excitement's hit a fucking wall as soon as you watch the show. But no, they are helping it well. They're building it well, and you know, again, they brought Watson to run the TV and the TV's been smooth, so they've done a good job. All right, so that's it. Chad will be back at some point. We'll talk 10-16, and that's it. So until then, everyone, smell that napalm.
See ya.